Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I have this feeling that September and October are going to feel just like the Twilight Zone. It's going to get crazier and nuttier and stranger and weirder and yet fantastic and fun if it's anything like what this weekend was. Wow. And, you know, normally on Sunday nights during NFL season, we go straight NFL. And why not? And we could. There's more than enough to keep me busy for the next 4 hours. In fact, if we could pay our bills that way, I would suggest we not take any commercial breaks. Just kidding. I can't. I have to have snacks. I can't talk with my mouth full in the air. So we're not going to do that. But it's week two of the NFL. We've got games that go down to the wire, including our first game in overtime that features the Super Bowl champions. We've got what may be the biggest mistake. I mean, egregious error of the NFL season so far. And a coach who is trying to explain it, but can't. We've got some unexpected 2-0 teams, some unexpected 0-2 teams, and a whole lot of drama from start to finish. Man, what a Sunday it was on the gridiron. And we had fans. In Dallas, 21,000 fans. So far, the largest fan group, the largest set of fans in this COVID shaded season. So we'll see. Those crowds will grow. But it was awesome to hear real fans at AT&T Stadium. I'm digging it. I'm digging the actual authentic noise generated by those fans. They had a lot to cheer for down the stretch. NFL could dominate, of course, but it's not the only thing that we have to work into the show. How about a buzzer-beating, game-winning three-point shot from Anthony Davis, not LeBron James, Anthony Davis, who had the last 10 points for the Lakers as they rallied past the Nuggets, and man, gut punch for Denver, who actually was down double figures earlier in the game and did what Denver does, which is rally. But the Lakers take a 2-0 lead in the Western Conference Finals. And then it was the final day of the U.S. Open, our national championship in golf. Only one golfer finished under par. You may remember Matt Adams, who joined us to wrap up our work week Friday morning. And he said he expected that the U.S. Open would react and would overcorrect, so to speak. Plus, the weather was going to make the course more difficult than what we saw at Winged Foot in the opening round. Remember, there were a bunch of players that were under par, which is not how the USGA wants it. So the USGA changes pin placements, makes the course more difficult. It eats golfers for lunch on Friday. Tiger Woods doesn't make the cut. Phil Mickelson doesn't make the cut. I mean, you had some of the best golfers in the world who had the weekend off. And at the very end, with the winds and the cooler temperatures, it was one guy who was still standing in red numbers. Bryson DeChambeau, beefed up Bryson. I suppose this answers at least some of the questions about what he did during quarantine and maybe responds to some of his critics. He had some incredible saves because he refuses to hit fairways. Anyway, so congratulations to Bryson DeChambeau, who just celebrated his 27th birthday last Wednesday and gets to hold up the trophy as he earns his first major win at the U.S. Open at Winged Foot. So we've got the final day of the U.S. Open, a buzzer beater in the NBA, in the Western Conference Finals, and so much football that I'm going to have to talk really fast to get through it all. But you know me, I'm always up for the challenge. Thanks so much for joining us. Hope you had an awesome weekend. I actually have a couple of small stories to share with you, sports stories, if you will, but we'll bury them at some point later in the show. We're live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can. Here's what you need to do. You need to find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio, and also on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Now that we're two games in, still a small sample size, you, of course, are still overreacting because that's your prerogative as football fans, and I do not mind. But I want to know the most unexpected 2-0 team and the most unexpected 0-2 team. Now, the 2-0 teams include the Chicago Bears. Raise your hand if you thought the Chicago Bears would be 2-0 to start the season. And then consider, in that same division, the Minnesota Vikings are 0-2. Oh, and they played some brutal, I mean abysmal football on Sunday. So in the NFC North alone, you've got what I consider to be two surprises. 2-0 Chicago, 0-2 Minnesota. All right, raise your hand if you thought the Rams would be 2-0 or the Cardinals would be 2-0. Man, that NFC West is a gauntlet. Raise your hand if you thought the Eagles would be 0-2. Or the Houston Texans, who do start out with a really difficult schedule, so I'll give them that. Raise your hand if you thought the Steelers would be 2-0. Or that the, I was going to say that the Dolphins would be 0-2, but that's not fair. Of course you thought the Dolphins would be 0-2. So that's what I'm looking for. The most unexpected 2-0 and the surprise 0-2. And I'm not sure you need to look outside the NFC, but please, I can't wait to see your answers. So on Twitter or on Facebook, and of course, a bit later, we'll put up your Monday MVP poll. And though I have definitely gone around and around and around, it's impossible. Impossible. To be fair and narrow it down to four candidates, but we're going to do it for a poll just so you can get mad at us. And then, of course, you can write in your own votes. So we're off and running here after hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. And, of course, you can always call us. We love football free for all. 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4CBS. Do you remember to start the season, the Seahawks on the road in Atlanta, and they had a near-perfect performance from Russell Wilson. Not as much about the run game, much more about Russ, Mr. Unlimited, throwing the football. And he was one of our candidates for Monday MVP. Why? Well, because he threw four touchdown passes and only missed on four throws all night long. Already, this is one of the overreactions to week number one. There was buzzing about whether or not Wilson might finally win an MVP. It was 1 week, and yet he looks amazing. Locked in. They definitely are switching it up offensively. They've got some premier receivers. Tyler Lockett, man, DK Metcalf, the more I watch him, the more I think he is the total package. Size, strength, physical toughness. Also mental toughness and focus. The catches he makes when he's under duress. We've seen it over and over. they've got Chris Carson catching touchdowns out of the backfield. And as if to say, well, you were impressed by week one. Watch this. Russell Wilson goes 5 touchdowns strong on Sunday Night Football against the Patriots.
Play clock is at 6. Wilson takes the snap. He's back to throw. Wilson looking. Heaves it up right side. He's got Carson in the end zone. Makes the catch. Touchdown, Seattle. Another perfect throw by Russell Wilson. Throwing a rainbow to the right side of the end zone. Carson runs underneath it. Makes the catch. And with 4:32 to go, it's Seattle on top of New England by a score of 34-23.
Oh, you probably thought it was over then. Well, it wasn't, but it was a lot of fun to see Russell Wilson chuck and duck, move and groove, shake and bake, to use some basketball terms. And he finishes up with yet another really impressive performance if you're just talking numbers. So through 2 weeks, yes, I do believe Russell Wilson is your MVP front runner. Stop it, Amy. I know, that's dumb, right? But this game went down to the wire, despite Russell Wilson's 5 touchdown passes. Why? Well, as we talked about with their season opener, they gave up a lot of yardage to the Falcons. And you can point to Matt Ryan and Calvin Ridley and Julio Jones and Todd Gurley, and all of that is legit. But this game was at home in Seattle, no fans, against the Patriots, who showed us essentially the Cam Newton run game in their season opening win. Oh, well, it was completely different in this game. Cam Newton was throwing darts. I mean, he was zinging the ball all over the field. And it was pretty amazing to watch. So with 4.5 minutes to go, you hear the call with Ryan Radke on the Westwood One Radio Network. Russ's 5th touchdown pass goes to Chris Carson. And with the extra point, it's 35-23. But it is definitely not over. I didn't hear any fat lady or skinny lady or medium-sized lady. She wears a size 12. The Patriots moved the ball quickly down the field. And here's what came to mind. I tweeted this. I thought it was clever. Maybe it wasn't so clever. Maybe it was too clever and people didn't understand what I meant. Or maybe I just think I'm amusing and entertaining and no one else does. Julian Edelman got dumped. He was jilted. Of course, it hurts. But you know what? He has rebounded. He's moved on. He has found a new love. To the tune of a career-high 179 receiving yards. He loves Cam Newton. He calls him a specimen. The dude is large. And you can tell they've already committed to this relationship, and they are making it work. And so the Patriots moved the ball quickly after falling down by a dozen. One of the big plays was a deep shot to Edelman for 33 yards. Now, he doesn't normally get past the defense. That's not really his game, especially down the middle of the field. But he nearly got in. Instead, he left that to his new love. Cam Newton, 1 yard rushing TD. And the Patriots are back within 5. And as much yardage as the Pats defense surrendered, as many points as the Patriots defense surrendered, when they had to, the defense forced a 3-and-out. And so Seattle goes 3-and-out, and New England reverts into its 2-minute drill. But doesn't it look different? Cam Newton versus Tom Brady. We knew if Cam was healthy that this offense would be a lot more versatile. Tom Brady's a Hall of Famer. One of the best quarterbacks of all time. That is undisputed. His legacy will not change in New England, no matter what Cam does. However, Cam's a different QB, and he offers a skill set that Tom Brady did not. There's versatility. And so once again, the Patriots pick up chunks of yardage. Cam Newton already has a connection with the second-year receiver in Keel Harry. You could see him working Harry and Edelman into the offense. And so it all comes down to this. First and goal at the 1 yard line, seconds to go. And because Cam Newton already had a pair of 1 yard rushing touchdowns, was it any big secret?
Newton from the shotgun. Johnson, the fullback, wings on the left side. Newton's going to run the ball. He gets hit. He flipped up in the air. He doesn't get there. Clock ticks down. It's all zeros. What a play by the Seahawks defense. They throw their helmets. They are going nuts on the field. Cam Newton, the first time tonight, I believe they've stopped him dead in his tracks, and I believe it was Bobby Wagner who got there to do it. What an end to what a game. The Seahawks win 35-30 over the Patriots. Wow.
On the Seahawks Radio Network, Steve Rabel, and officially it was LJ Collier who tripped up Cam Newton to end the game. First and goal at the 1 yard line, and he gets tripped up. I mean, he's a wide load, and a dude is large, according to Edelman. And every time I listen to or watch a game that features Cam Newton, you always get some version of this. You just don't really know how big he is until you're standing next to him. Yup. But trip him up, and even that large frame can't get across the goal line. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. This number is massive. But chew on this for a second. The Patriots got 444 total yards from Cam Newton. 397 through the air, and then another 47 on the ground. 444 total yards. That accounts for nearly all of their offense. Three total touchdowns, and yet, in the end, he was still frustrated about the way the game wrapped up.
It's got to be better here at the end. And, you know, we put ourselves in a position to win. And, you know, when you do that, you got to finish.
I've heard from some Patriots fans who say they are encouraged. Even though this was a loss and it was on the road in Seattle, a difficult place to play, they're not going to call it a moral victory, but they are going to tell me that it was fun to watch and they were encouraged. By the way, it's maybe a warm-up for what's to come in 2 weeks on the road at Kansas City, where there likely will be fans at Arrowhead Stadium. No rest for the weary. A game against the Raiders at Gillette coming up in the middle. It's a tough road trip to go to Seattle. Good early test. What stands out to me is the versatility of the offense. And as much as people wanted to point to the receiving core with the Patriots last year as that as being the reason why they were so bad or why Tom Brady's numbers weren't anywhere near what we were used to with him, Cam has a skill set, and he has worked hard with these receivers, you can tell. He didn't even join the team until late. And yet, you can see they've already got a good rapport and a good rhythm. This is a lot of fun. Awesome to see Cam Newton healthy and happy. The man is happy, except for what happened at the end of the game. And so the Patriots fall to 1-1, and they are now second place in the AFC East. The Buffalo Bills at 2-0. I want to know from you, through 2 weeks, which 2-0 team is the most unexpected, and which 0-2 team catches you off guard a little bit? You can find us on Twitter, After Hours CBS, also on our Facebook page. We are just getting started. Coming up in 20 minutes, we'll spend some time with Patriots insider Karen Garigian of the Boston Herald. And we're going to have some post-game reaction from Russell Wilson, of course, from Pete Carroll, who, by the way, just had a birthday last week as well. He turned 69. And yet when there was a scrumble on the sidelines, actually some pushing and shoving and a bunch of guys getting into it on the Seahawks bench, guess who is wading into the middle of all the big bodies? That would be Pete Carroll trying to protect his players and break it up. I love that guy. So, we are just getting started. There's a lot to talk about. Like that unbelievable finish to the Falcons-Cowboys game at AT&T Stadium. Wowzers. I still can't believe it. And I've watched it how many times? I think I've lost count.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Second and two, and they are inside the 10. Prescott back and looking and throwing it in the end zone. Cut! Schultz! Touchdown in the back of the end zone. Back to a one-score game at the five-minute mark. Second and goal at the one. Prescott's going to keep it at right guard.
Got three
touchdowns. Push sneak. Touchdown, Prescott. A three rushing touchdown game for Dak Prescott. No other Cowboy quarterback has ever done that. 46 for the win. No timeouts. Good snap. Good hold. 46 yards. Yes, sir. Kiss that pig. The final score, Dallas 40, Atlanta 39.
It's a football feeding frenzy. After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Did you hear the fans? 21,000 strong at AT&T Stadium. They were crazy for what was a nutty rally by the Dallas Cowboys. And the offense deserves a ton of credit. The defense does as well. Mike McCarthy, there were some interesting calls in this game, some failed fake punts, going for it on two-point conversions. When there were moments where you kind of wondered, okay, what's going on here? But nothing as big as the Falcons' gaffe late in the game that allowed the Cowboys one more shot to set up Greg Zuerlein's game-winning kick. Brad Sham with the calls. The montage, if you will, for the Cowboys' comeback. Mike McCarthy's first win as the head coach of the Cowboys, and it comes at the expense of the Falcons, 40-39. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. One of the themes trending from Sunday is the Falcons blowing it again. But early on, it was the Cowboys that looked like they were blowing it, that they were going to fall to 0-2. Really careless with the football. Three early fumbles that led to a sizable lead for Atlanta. In fact, the Falcons were up 20-0 and still up 19 at the half. But the Cowboys do have an explosive offense. We know that. And they score touchdowns on four of five possessions in the second half. Dak Prescott, 468 total yards and four touchdowns. He's going to be one of our Monday MVP candidates. Though he and the Cowboys are not in position to steal this game, to snatch victory from the jaws of defeat, if not for the Falcons. So there is a touchdown by Dallas that brings them to within 2 points, 39-37. And they decide, because it's late in the game, they've got to try the onside kick. Not many teams use it anymore. It's really high degree of difficulty, low rate of success. But that rate of success gets a lot higher when the opposing team refuses to dive on the football. If you haven't seen it, Google it, find it. We're trying to get the actual play-by-play. I've heard it, though it doesn't really describe it. In the moment, recognizing there are four Falcons watching this ball spin like a top, and for some reason, they're protecting the ball. They're allowing it to spin as opposed to just leaping on top of it. Couple of things. Do they know the rules? The team that's kicking the ball, the team that is attempting the onside kick, cannot touch it unless it goes 10 yards. The receiving team can touch it anytime they want. And yet somehow, either the Falcons don't know this, or they thought the ball was spinning so furiously they might make a mistake. I mean, they essentially surrounded the ball, almost like they were boxing out for a rebound, and they're surrounding the hoop. They kept their defenders behind them, or their marks behind them, for a couple of seconds, and then just watched when C.J. Goodwin pounced on the ball. So do they not realize that if you're the receiving team, the ball doesn't need to travel 10 yards? Or did they think if someone touched it, that it was a live ball, it could be a turnover, they were afraid? I have no idea. I just wish someone would have been aggressive enough to pounce on the ball. You are big men. Just leap and land on the football. And for heaven's sakes, there are four of you standing right there. If it's a squirter, you should be able to wrap it up. You can't just wait for it to travel 10 yards. I've never seen anything like it. And it's possible that one of them didn't know the rules. Maybe two of them. But there were four of them. How could all four of them not know the rules? Oy! And so that leads to the Cowboys getting into field goal range and the 46-yarder from Greg Zuerlein. Advantage Dallas. Advantage Jerry's World, advantage 21,000 Cowboys fans who made a whole lot of noise. So first Dan Quinn, because this is all I care about. Whatever else the Falcons did, and Matt Ryan had four touchdown passes, Calvin Ridley had a day. But I just need to know, Coach Quinn, if your special teams unit understands the rules of an onside kick.
Generally, on an onside kick, they're looking to get a block first. Then it goes, you know, the high hop goes to the next player. So when that instance happens and it's not one that is a high hopper, then you just transfer in and you go to your ball. But you're looking at your assignment first of who you have to go block, certainly the ball and then your assignment. So they definitely know the rule.
So if they know the rule and they were blocking, waiting for a high hop, and a high hop didn't come, what was the next step? What were they waiting for? I've never seen anything like it. And it's crazy because there were four of them surrounding the football. Fine, three of you block, one of you land on it. Oh my gosh. Nuts, right? I get that the ball's a slippery little sucker, but you don't need to be afraid of it. It doesn't have the virus. Meanwhile, Cowboys with a massive comeback to give Mike McCarthy his first victory as a coach of Dallas.
We showed our resiliency today. I want to thank just those 21,000 plus fans that showed up today. As you said, I don't know if I've been in many games like this. The only thing I can think of is the playoff game my rookie year.
Cowboys now 1-1. Falcons fall to 0-2. Dak Prescott with a huge day.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Cam takes the snap. He'll keep it. Running left side. Dives, and he's tripped up shy of the goal line. It's over. The Seahawks will hang on and win. Newton kept it on a quarterback sweep to the left, and he got tripped up. He went airborne, went down shy of the goal line, and the Seattle Seahawks survive. They win it by a score of 35-30.
For our guys to hang all the way to the end and have to go all the way down to 2 seconds and no time left on the clock and the whole thing, last play of the game, is it's an extraordinary moment for football players and for a team. And, you know, you either come through or you don't. And there's so much intensity in that moment, and the guys on the field will never forget it.
Hits, misses, and messes. Time to talk football after hours with Amy Lawrence.
Pete Carroll reacting to the final play of the victory over the Patriots. And it happened in such dramatic fashion because of how well Russell Wilson and the offense were operating. And yet, as we saw last week against Atlanta, this Seahawks defense will give up a lot of yardage. And also because there are many people who watched the Patriots opener and thought, okay, Cam is back to his old running self, which he is and can be, but he can also chuck that football. It was amazing to watch him throw the football on Sunday night. And when the Patriots defense had to, it got a couple of stops and gave the ball right back to Cam Newton. and the Patriots offense moved the ball effectively. He spread it around. He used a lot of different targets, as did Russ. In fact, Russ's five touchdown passes went to five different receivers. Nerd alert. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Our Patriots beat writer is going to join us at the top of the hour instead. So following this game in Seattle, Karen Garigian, she's covered the Patriots for a long time, and she will join us and we'll hear her thoughts. I can't wait to ask her about the versatility of the offense, to be sure. But as we're talking about week two in the NFL, injuries have to be one of the top stories. So as much as we got some fantastic finishes, a lot of fun games, and strange games too, a lot of inconsistency out there. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers win their home opener, but Brady and the offense are still pretty inconsistent, if not for Leonard Fournette coming off the bench for over 100 yards and a couple of touchdowns. This might have gone differently. Still a lot of turnovers out there. You look at Steelers, who are now 2-0, had a healthy lead against the Denver Broncos, who are playing with Jeff Driskel instead of Drew Lock, and they had a couple of turnovers in the second half that allowed Denver to get right back into it. Bears-Giants. The Bears do all their scoring in the first half. They don't score in the second half. The Giants don't score in the first half, but put enough points on the board to make it a close one down to the wire in the second half. Weird, right? It's a seesaw affair. And so there's a lot that we could talk about on the field, but there's also a lot on the injured list. And this is definitely a blow for the NFL this week too. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Our toll-free line at CBS Sports Radio is 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4CBS. It's sponsored by Geico. Did you know right now Geico offers an extra 15% credit on your car, motorcycle, and RV policies? And that's on top of what Geico can already save you. So what are you waiting for? Visit geico.com to learn more. We've got some time here as we head up toward the top. So 855-212-4227. The most devastating injury, at least at this point, believed to be Saquon Barkley, the Giants' Uber second-year run back, who went down in a heap and instantly grabbed his knee and was in a lot of pain. And according to multiple reports, after the initial testing, the Giants fear an ACL, though at this point they're not confirming anything.
I don't have a diagnosis on his knee. He's going to see some doctors tomorrow. We'll wait and see what that is. Obviously, we're all praying for the best. I would just say this, you know, regardless of whatever the outcome is going to be and what the doctors say tomorrow, I wouldn't fall asleep on 26. It's going to be a hell of a story either way.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if Saquon Barkley has to come back from a torn ACL or some other serious injury and is out for a year, of course, it would be a great comeback story. And he's young and he's in fantastic world-class shape and he's going to have the best treatment and the best rehab available. But it doesn't mean it isn't extremely disappointing for the first-year head coach Joe Judge, but more specifically for Saquon. I mentioned Drew Lock, the Denver quarterback, who's just in his second year, first full year as a starter, will likely miss a couple of weeks with a shoulder sprain, who's fumbled around with a football and got driven to the ground. I think it was Bud Dupree who drove him to the ground and he stood up awkwardly, tried to throw, but said it felt weird. And so he was knocked out of that Pittsburgh-Denver game in the first quarter, and Jeff Driskel had to come in and play. While we're talking quarterbacks, Tyrod Taylor, a surprise injury, actually hurt himself in pregame. So he's declared unable to go by the medical team because of a chest injury. And you've got Justin Herbert pressed into duty. Now, before you get excited, because Herbert did look good, and I know there are a lot of Oregon fans who are pretty jazzed up about the way that Herbert was slinging the ball and the way he was running around in his first, we'll call it a surprise start. But Anthony Lynn is saying, when Tyrod Taylor's healthy, he is still the starter. So it's not Justin's job, but it was kind of fun to see him out there on the field for the first time, even though he had mere minutes to digest the news that he would be starting on Sunday.
Herbert under center. Josh Kelly 5 yards behind. Strength of the line is right. Fakes the handoff, rolling to his right. Herbert still on his feet. He's got the mobility. Touchdown, Chargers! Herbert in the shotgun from the right hash. They rush four. Herbert takes a shot to the end zone. Wide open. Caught. Touchdown, Chargers! Justin Herbert to Jalen Guyton for his first TD pass of his career.
I was really excited. That's one of those moments that I've waited for my entire life, and to be out there, to be on the field going against the Kansas City Chiefs and playing alongside some of these guys on offense, it was really special, and it's a moment that I'll never forget.
Congratulations to Justin Herbert, and welcome to the NFL, rookie. It was cool to see him out there, and as I say, I'm sure there are a lot of Oregon fans, a lot of fans of the Chargers who are thinking the future, and absolutely, you're looking at the plan for the future, but not yet. And so when Tyrod Taylor is healthy, that's what you can expect. We'll come back to this Chiefs-Chargers game in a second because the Super Bowl champs were on the ropes and those two AFC West opponents went into overtime, first overtime game of the season. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. But other injuries that we have to wait to hear more about Monday, Tuesday. Devontae Adams of the Green Bay Packers. Christian McCaffrey actually missed most of the fourth quarter of the Panthers-Bucks game. And they're waiting, or we're waiting, they're waiting to find out, based on tests, if it's a serious injury or if it's something that he'll be able to recover from. He already had a couple of touchdowns before he suffered that lower leg injury, potentially an ankle. Ankle is what got Jimmy Garoppolo. He did not come back into the game after the halftime locker room. So his is a high ankle sprain, and he was just one of the injuries for the Niners. They have so many guys already on the shelf. We knew about Dee Ford, Richard Sherman, George Kittle did not play on Sunday. But add to that, Garoppolo with the high ankle sprain, Raheem Mostert, who broke free for an 80-yard touchdown run on the first play of the game. He didn't finish the game because of a knee. Tevin Coleman with a knee. Defensive tackle Solomon Thomas, who didn't look like he got hit any particular way or that it was anything real serious, but also departed with a knee injury and did not return. And then here's the one that a lot of people are worried about, Nick Bosa. He was in a lot of pain, and they had to help him off the field onto a cart. And so the Niners are, they're obviously missing a lot of guys, but also Kyle Shanahan really upset about the field conditions at MetLife Stadium.
Jimmy, high ankle is what we have now. Bosa, and Bosa's most likely an ACL. Really, they got to confirm that tomorrow, but most likely. Solomon is, from what I'm told, a little bit in the same boat as Bosa. And then Mostert, don't think it was that. Just had some knee issues in the game on that turf.
They actually have to play their next game at MetLife as well. So they're staying in the New Jersey, well, in the New Jersey area near the stadium. It's right outside New York City across the Hudson River. But they're staying. They're not going back to the West Coast. And already Shanahan is saying a lot of the Niners players are freaked out about getting back out there on the turf at MetLife. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. A lot of names on this injured list, and this is not even a complete list. And so Monday, it could be a dark day as we wait for diagnoses and find out which of these guys will be able to return and which of them will not. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. David's in Atlanta. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I must say that the defeat from the Cowboys, the Falcons just handed over to the Cowboys. I think what may have happened with the onside kick is there was a starting linebacker who's been recovering the onside kick. kicks previously, and he was out with cramps, and whoever was designated for his position didn't do their job and go after the football. So I think that was part of the problem. Also, as you've alluded to earlier, there was an inexplicable go-for-two-point conversion when the Falcons had a substantial lead, and that didn't make any sense. I think if they had a 19-point lead and they would be going for 21 or 20.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's a low percentage chance to go for 2 points. Go ahead and kick the point.
It's not that low percentage. It's especially when you have an offense that was locked in the way that the Falcons were. So I understand it. Then you're up by three touchdowns as opposed to what they were, especially when you have that kind of a cushion to play with. It doesn't really bother me. As for the onside kick, I don't care who's designated to go after the damn football. Get on the football. It doesn't matter whose name is on the back of the jersey. Just get the football. That's the only thing that matters.
Yeah, that was a little strange. At some point, something needs to click in and realize that, you know, the other guys are eventually going to get to it if you don't fall on it.
Duh.
That was a very bizarre thing, and I think this may actually be the nail in the coffin for the coaching staff, because they've got to make the playoffs or I think they're gone. And they just have no pass defense this year. Those corners are bad. They don't have much of a pass rush. And they're going to have a lot of exciting games, but we're probably going to look at about a 500 football team for the Falcons.
Well, similar to the way the Falcons started last year when they would put up a lot of offense and yet the defense couldn't hold a lead, and so much of the responsibility fell on Matt Ryan and his receivers, and, of course, at the time, the running core that featured Devontae Freeman, they're going to have to do a lot of that. They didn't avoid their first 0-2 start in six seasons under Dan Quinn, but it's going to take a rally now. And if you're talking about playoffs, David, thank you for your call from Atlanta. If you're talking about playoffs, teams that are 0-2 rally to make the playoffs only about 11.5%, 12% of the time. So the odds are not in their favor, but there is a team here or there that will do it. Every couple of years, you'll get a team. In fact, the Texans started 0-3 a couple of years ago and made the postseason. So there's still time. There's still hope, but this was a brutal loss. Coming up next, the Patriots have reasons to hope despite their loss in Seattle.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.